This morning I'm talking about contentment and satisfaction. Words in the teaching in Agni Yoga are sometimes presented from two approaches, from an esoteric approach and also the exoteric approach. Definitions of the outer meaning of a word and the more inner meaning. Inner meaning is what we call esoteric meaning of the word. So I'm going to be talking about the two approaches of satisfaction and of contentment. The outer meaning of the term self-satisfaction means to lead a happy and healthy life where self-satisfaction plays a key and vital role. The outer meaning of self-satisfaction says that such satisfaction should be achieved in all aspects of life. This is sounding really good. Well, just give me a moment. Achieving self-satisfaction lies within oneself. However, when approaching the inner meaning of this word, the spiritual meaning of self-satisfaction is a physical, emotional, and mental saturation in which the person does not strive. That's the esoteric meaning of self-satisfaction. When the person does not strive. The inner, more subtle meaning of this word says that in satisfaction, the person will feel happy with what they are and what they have. This, of course, is not the way of Agni Yoga. Agni Yoga teaches that self-satisfaction, and this is a quote from the book Agni Yoga, verse 484. It says, the sign of mediocrity and ignorance is self-satisfaction. Not satisfaction, but joy and eternal labor is the destiny of the great and ascending one. The most base of all feelings is that of self-satisfaction. Any feeling has its consequences, but self-satisfaction, the master says, brings only death. So those are two references, Agni Yoga, verse 484, and also Fiery World, volume 1, verse 385. Self-satisfaction has no striving. It escapes any labor if it feels its happiness is threatened. Now, this sounds a bit like a certain stage that teenagers go through, doesn't it? The generic nature of teenagers. You ask him or her to do something with frequent negative responses, an emotionally injured response. But we see the same behaviors in the classroom at school. The child is not inspired. He doesn't understand yet the need to evolve, to change himself, to develop the potential within his soul. And many adults are like this as well. They are satisfied with what they are and what they have. Approaching the meaning of the words earthly contentment and spiritual contentment, we find the same distinction. Master Moria says about earthly contentment. He says, in the days of earthly contentment, the person's vigilance becomes obscured. He explains that contentment of one's earthly attachments brings on the manifestation of destruction. Destructive is the feeling of earthly contentment. And that quote is from the book Infinity, Volume 1, Verse 243. Spiritual contentment is just the opposite. Spiritual contentment is not conditioned by outer conditions and circumstances. A spiritually content person will joyfully involve themselves in hard labor and pain and suffering, and in so doing, feel greater spiritual contentment. Suffering is something I was going to talk about today and knew that it would be too much. So think about the term yourself. Maybe do some research. Read some of the Agni Yoga books and learn what suffering really means. It's not, oh, poor me. That's not the reference in the teaching to suffering. It's very special meaning. Spiritual contentment is accompanied with the gratitude of opportunity. The opportunity to serve, to suffer, and to labor. I think that spiritual contentment and confidence are two sides of one coin. Something else to think about, confidence and contentment. A modern master described how the Buddha had encouraged his monks by stating that those who practiced diligently would surely be enlightened in 7 days. Or if not in 7 days, then in 7 months or maybe 7 years. A young American monk heard this and asked if it was still true. The master promised that if the young monk was continuously mindful without break for 7 days, he would be enlightened. Well, excitedly, the young monk started his 7 days, only to be lost in self-forgetfulness 10 minutes later. Coming back to himself, he again started his 7 days, only to become lost once more in mindless thought. Perhaps about what he would do after his enlightenment. Again and again, he began his 7 days. And again and again, he lost his continuity of mindfulness. A week later, he was not enlightened, but he had become very much aware of his habitual fantasies and wandering of mind. A most instructive way to begin his practice on the path to real awakening. Gandhi stated, this is so cool, this is the coolest little story. We could all relate to it, perhaps. Anyway, Gandhi said, I have only 3 enemies. My favorite enemy, the one most easily influenced for the better, is the British Empire. My second enemy, the Indian people. They are far more difficult. But my most formidable opponent is a man named Mohandas K. Gandhi. With him, I seem to have very little influence. Contentment in the spiritual sense is a feeling of fullness, physically, emotionally, mentally, with deep spiritual gratitude and with a strong spirit of striving to expand oneself and to hold more light, love, energy, beauty, and goodness That's spiritual contentment. Tagore one day decided to be a Sannyasin. Sannyasin is one who renounces. He told his wife he was leaving her to go to the most essential, which was to save his soul. "Where are you going to save your soul?" she asked him. "To a cave in the mountains," he replied. "I want to save my soul. It is most essential to me." His wife asked, "What are you searching for?" "I'm searching for God," he said. Tagore left and headed for the mountains. On his way, someone appeared to him. Tagore asked, "Who are you, sir?" The vision replied, "I am God." "Where are you going?" Tagore asked. God said, "I'm going to your home." Upon hearing these words, Tagore returned home and served his wife and children and performed his duties and responsibilities as if he were living in God, the most essential. In understanding the word labor, the most distinction occurs from the inner or esoteric meaning and its outer exoteric meaning. The exoteric or outer meaning of labor is the amount of physical, mental, and social effort used to produce goods and services in an economy. Now that's right out of Webster's dictionary. I'm not going to repeat that. Okay. The inner meaning of the word to labor. This is important, and at least it was to me, because I remember early on reading that labor in Torgham's teachings and in Agni Yoga, and it was so vitally different from anything I ever had learned about that word labor, which was not a word that really appealed to me. So now I really understand through the teaching the inner meaning of labor, which is to strive, to progress, to work hard on ourselves for the future, so that our unfolding human soul can increase in light and love and beauty. It is through working on ourselves that our consciousness expands. So that's labor. Once a woman stopped between images of the blessed Buddha and Maitreya, not knowing to whom to offer her reverence. And the image of the blessed Buddha uttered these words, "According to my covenant, revere the future. Standing in defense of the past, direct your gaze toward the dawn. Remember how we labor for the future, and direct all your being into the future. In rays of knowledge, we bring a teaching strange to the world, for the light of the world is covered by darkness." This reminds me of, my gosh, a long time ago, some of us were in Sedona and enjoying the company of Torgham Saradarian, great, great teacher. And I went up to him because I was in conflict. Where do I send my donations? Do I give them to your group or do I give them to my group? And he said, "We are all one." Well, over the years, as I'm doling out money, you know, to his group and wondering about how does this mean oneness between that group and this group? Well, it took me years to understand, and this is the answer. We're all striving to the future. So what we're giving to one, we are giving to the other. and that's enlightenment. Enlightenment takes us into the future. Spiritual contentment occurs when we not only study the teaching, but also when we apply the teaching to our life. For example, a while ago, I posted on our White Mountain Agni Yoga Living Ethics Community Facebook page, I posted two questions. One question was, how do you apply Agni Yoga to your life? The second question, do you see others applying the principles of Agni Yoga to their lives, such as heads of state? No one answered. But there are great questions, you know, and perhaps they were contemplating the answer. And then I gave two examples of Agni Yoga disciplines that we can apply to our life. The first is transform the teaching into a daily necessity. Transform the teaching into a daily necessity. And number two was observe yourself in order to reject egotistical thoughts and actions. Observe yourself in order to reject egotistical thoughts and actions. Agni Yoga is fire. It is light. And it is light, and light is life. Agni Yoga is fire, it is light, and light is life. This is a very good definition of Agni Yoga. Light is fire. Life is light. You can just twist those words around. It all defines Agni Yoga as fire. If a person wants to be spiritually on fire, one way to do it is to put light into their life. This means to transform the teaching into their daily life, to make it a living ethic. The second discipline is this: watch yourself in order to reject egotistical thoughts and actions. This is a self-imposed discipline, and one that a truly contented person practices in order to feel fulfilled. There is no true contentment when you contact higher energies but are not capable of using them in service. If you are able to contact higher energies, but at the same time, you have not yet rejected your egotistical thoughts and actions, then the service you engage in will be for selfish motive and not for the common good. It will, in the end, lead yourself and the ones you are leading into darkness. When a person talks about the higher teaching and feels contentment, this contentment will be greater if the person applies it in their life. This is why we do not fish for new students. It is why we do not proselytize. The person must be seeking the higher teaching, for this is an indication that they are experiencing a divine discontent. Even our children that we gave the teaching to as youngsters must reach a time in their lives where they recognize the teachings of hierarchy as a higher teaching and need to have a deep hunger to live it in their heart, to apply it in their lives. Children today who live in Protestant communities are oftentimes afraid to believe in karma and reincarnation, for it makes them different from their peers. If this is the case, it is important the parent does not impose their faith, their own faith and beliefs upon that child. For the child, the teenager will eventually rebel and will resist such thinking and, in fact, turn against it, against the wisdom of the higher teaching. They must discover it in their heart, as we have done. You must be aware of the fact that earthly contentment can turn into self-satisfaction. Spiritual contentment turns into happiness, joy, and bliss in order to create an ever-striving spirit. If it does not, it then becomes a coffin for the human spirit, and it turns into self-satisfaction. A spiritually content person becomes an integrated person. Integration is the cooperation of physical, emotional, and mental vehicles. Integration is a process where the soul, our human soul, with the help of the transpersonal self, forms the three vehicles into a unit that we call the personality. The integrated person enjoys fully the things that he or she has, the things that they have desired. They enjoy all that they have in their life. That's the integrated person. The presence of an integrated person brings contentment of those who have the ability, listen to this, this is a little bit of mathematics here, in a sense. The presence of an integrated person brings contentment to those who have the ability to contact that person on all three levels of their being, including their spiritual nature. However, if those around and about him can only contact his physical nature, that person will become unsatisfied with the integrated person. It is here where relationships become difficult and strained, and oftentimes finds the relationship ending. A completely integrated person cannot be controlled, and this is the answer. The integrated person cannot be controlled or contained by a person who is divided within himself. A divided person deciphers the integrated person, either physically, emotionally, or mentally, or else with all his nature in uneven proportion. The image of the integrated person is a broken image in the divided person, and he cannot feel any complete contentment. Do you understand? Did you hear? Okay. So what does this mean? Now listen carefully, for it will perhaps give you some insights into your personal relationships. Any object that does not satisfy us will evoke our anger, refusal, and hatred, which often turns into a destructive or self-destructive action. We see in life the law of integration and wholeness. It creates higher and higher forms. Integration and wholeness. it starts with vegetables over minerals. Then animals over vegetables. Then humans over animals. And then superhuman over humans. For example, the path starts like this, like a bazaar in the beginning. Then a street. Then a freeway. Then a highway. Then a path toward lonely mountains. Then a narrow thread through the needle's eye. As we proceed, we become more and more discerning. This means we deal with more essentials until the most essential reveals itself to us. And then this, we first accumulate. We then discriminate. We then drop away lots of things. Then we choose only the most essential. Then, like the Sanjusan, we renounce all that is non-essential because we have found our destination. When the Master M advised us to be perfect, very probably he wanted us to be integrated human beings who act as a unit and not as a group of insane people. If you observe your threefold nature, you see how often your emotions and your words and your actions and thoughts do crazy things against each other. Integration comes into being only when our soul slowly forms and exercises greater control over its vehicles. As the control and integration proceed, now the human soul feels a greater spiritual contentment from life because it begins to contact life less partially and responds to it through his wholeness. If you are integrated, this means that your words come from your thoughts, feelings, and body simultaneously. And the effect of your words are very powerful. But if you talk only through your emotions or body, or even through your thoughts only, your effect is almost nil. Focus, strength, and penetration comes into being where your words are pronounced by the whole of your nature. Do you see? How can you recognize if you are an integrated person? You create holistic activities, unity, and synthesis. How can you recognize if you are not integrated? You create separatism. Think about this. Try to understand what you are doing and what it means and how the effects appear when you create separatism. When you create cleavages, when you create chaos with resulting destruction. Higher forces wait millions of years. Listen to this. Higher forces wait millions of years to find a person who is whole. It's a very profound statement. All great ones prepared themselves for thousands of years to meet the needs of the higher worlds. How can we achieve integration? When we consciously suffer for a great cause, for your vision. See that word suffer again? We achieve integration when we consciously suffer for a great cause, for your vision. Such suffering integrates your mechanism. Suffering to raise the levels of other human beings, to expand their consciousness, or to heal them from their various ailments, calls forth the energy from your innermost core and brings all parts of you together. This is why great emphasis has been laid upon suffering, renunciation, and crucifixion. However, please know that not all suffering is beneficial. If the suffering is the result, this is the suffering. If the suffering is the result of your stupidities, your ignorance, or ill deeds, there is very little benefit in it. However, conscious suffering is for a great vision, ideal, or a service. You will transform yourself and make spiritual breakthroughs. This is why the path of suffering for others and for group achievement is the shortest path. It is in the heart of conscious suffering that your higher centers begin to unfold and put you in contact with the world of higher impressions. It is here that you also begin to integrate and align yourself with the vaster system of energies. A great sage says, conscious suffering for a group vision is the only way to achieve the highest joy. And now you understand contentment, satisfaction, integration, and labor.